Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, what color of evolution do you live in? Or do you experience yourself within? Or not? We're going to understand these colors and how our society is maybe getting a little confused about where we belong, who are we, who should we be? And maybe to help us understand it better, we're going to look at it with the help of an expert about evolution who's been on the show before. I'm so glad he could come and join us again, Tom Goddard. Tom, welcome to Energy Stew.
Thank you, Peter. It's great to be with you again.
So we're in confusing times. Would you say that these different colors that I'm relating to have a lot to do with it?
I think they do. And I'll just give you a couple of seconds of background about how I came to kind of hear about the colors of evolution and how the colors themselves have evolved in our conversation. A book published in the mid-1990s, Spiral Dynamics, by Beck and Cowan, introduced a spiral of colors that represented mimetic structures of evolution, of consciousness.
Mimetic, you mean the different themes of those structures. So each periods of evolution have different themes.
Exactly. Contagious thought. This is before the internet version of meme, which was a clever thing on a colored screen. What Beck and Cowan were talking about, relying on the work of Gebser, happens both at the individual and at the societal level. We get an idea or a cluster of ideas that dominate our worldview. And so, for example, imagine a culture that is comprised completely of clans. Everybody you know is a relative. And then that has its own color under the spiral dynamics structure. I think it's tan. And then we as a culture evolve beyond that so that we get a larger identity. Let's say our identity is it's a bunch of clans together pulled together by a strong warrior king. That is the red level in their structure. It's the red level of consciousness where power is the way of validating truth. We know what is true because that powerful person tells us that it's true.
Yet our minds are programmed by society. We're born into a meme. We think we all have very free minds that can think any way they want. And if we look around, we wonder why all these other minds don't think the way we do. And they're in these different structures of memes, of themes of consciousness that they can't help. We're not all as free-willed and free-minded as we think we are because of our societal patterns that we're born into, that our souls have chosen to choose that way of thinking, that we don't know how to think otherwise. Although there are exceptions in every society of people who think differently than the norm. But there's so many norms going on, and that's why what we're looking at now is this confusion, is that what is a norm to one person isn't a norm to another because they're so conditioned by these themes, by these cultural themes. They don't know how to think in for instance, in my theme. They look at me like I'm just from another planet.
I get a bit of that myself.
Right.
But we are trapped primarily because we are unconscious of what's actually happening. We're unconscious of our own world view. And so a friend of mine, Jerry Good, calls it gogology. We're unaware of the goggles that we're wearing.
I love that.
And goggology is the science of taking off your goggles and looking at them, and so that you can become conscious of the filters that you're walking around the world with. So a filter of a person embedded in a strong, let's say, an authoritarian dictatorship is unaware that he or she is wearing authoritarian goggles until they take them off and say, oh, I've been validating truth by listening to what that leader says rather than something else.
Well, let's look at that in terms of people who are born into evangelistic communities, right. You know, fundamental communities, that most of them, they just, you know, they believe, you know, they're ministers, they're rabbis, they're chiefs, and they adhere to a code. It's a very tribal way of living. You have to protect the tribe, and you don't want to think outside of the tribe because everybody has to conform for the survival of the tribe.
That can be. Another level at which fundamentalism can happen is the level under the Gebser model, or the Beck and Cowan model, is the level above authoritarian. And that is back to the color wars, what Beck and Cowan called blue and what more modern integral theorists call amber. And that is validating truth by reference to a book, let's say a holy text, or a set of principles, you know, even those who are fundamentalists about political documents like the United States Constitution. That is actually an evolution beyond authoritarianism. It's not simply what that powerful person says, it's what that powerful document says, or set of beliefs. And fundamentalism can reside at that level as well, and that's actually an advance over authoritarianism.
Yeah, well, I see it as too, it's almost too idealistic, because in a tribal society, the tribe is even more important than the document. And so that's why, for instance, I remember when it was found that we were, that the United States was torturing prisoners to save us, supposedly, that these fundamentalists were in favor of it because it saved the tribe.
Right.
So they were going against their creed, but they were, the tribe overran their rules.
In fact, I think that's an excellent point, Peter. I think that is a tribal mentality that paid lip service to the document.
Right,
but actually had not advanced in their goggles beyond the actual tribe mentality, and there were others who said, "Wait a minute, the Constitution does not allow for this," and so that's where they disagreed. The Constitution would be this higher level of consciousness, either blue or amber, depending on your color code. Referencing a document that is bigger and more important than tribe. And then the tribalists simply ignored those higher principles and said, no, we got to protect the tribe. That's the out group and we are the in group. Therefore, we must torture.
And yet now, for instance, in terms of leaders who are sexually abusive and the tribe is saying, well, we don't care about those morals, even though those are part of our creed. We are willing to sacrifice morals for the sake of some higher creed that, you know, because they want, you know, for instance, this Supreme Court justice to override any abortion rules. So they have this idea that the rules are, you know, there's a sacrifice that can be made for the rules.
Well, and it's my sense that this is where we lean on Whitman's statement that I am a multitude. We are all of these levels.
That's why there's a color war going on.
That's right, because it's within. The war is within our individual selves and with our communal selves. And what can move somebody up or down, what can move somebody down into more regressive levels of consciousness is overreaching fear. And I can operate, let's say for example, I can operate at this blue or amber level of validating truth to a higher document until I get really scared. And if I'm really scared, that can activate my lower levels of consciousness, all the way from the tribal, even down to more primitive, like my inner child, you know, so, oh no, help me, mommy. You know, we can be driven in our consciousness downstream and give up our adherence to the higher levels of consciousness in a time of fear.
And that's what the purpose of political propaganda.
Right. Yeah, political propaganda very often is designed to drive us downstream, and very seldom to elevate our consciousness. You very seldom hear political rhetoric that lifts us. And when we do, it can actually sometimes generate in some members of the community the very fear that drives them down. But the bulk of political rhetoric, it seems to me, is designed to figure out what fear can I tap into, what of your fears can I tap into that will have you give me what I want from you, your vote or your money. And that very often is downstream from where we aspire to be.
Right, so let's understand what the time that we're in and how it might be or could be moving us forward, because it looks like it's just driving us down.
Right. Well, my personal approach is to try to find the opposite. What is it in the musical Rent? The opposite of love isn't hate, it's fear. And so if fear is what drives consciousness down, then what actually drives consciousness up? It's love. And so to the extent that I can in my own personal meditations, find the capacity, new capacity to love all of the levels of consciousness and to love in larger, increasing concentric circles of reach, then I personally can hope to expand my consciousness, to move from tribe to principle to higher levels of consciousness that are more inclusive of others.
And that's having compassion for all and understanding that we can't make progress unless we can help understand these different inputs that we get from society that drive us down, that we need to understand who's being driven down and why, and how to pull love into the equation, that people can then surrender more to cooperate.
Exactly. And it also, it has very much to do with compassion, but it also has to do with putting on, again, new goggles that see things from a larger perspective. So if I am I'm in a large city here as I speak to you in California. And if I were to look at the issues of Southern California, just from the issues of Southern California, that's one level of consciousness. But if I can start to see the issues of where I am from a broader perspective, influenced by what's going on across the ocean in Japan and China, and influenced by the impact of my activities on Arizona and New Mexico to the east, then I actually can see not only individuals from a more compassionate perspective, but to see problems and the issues of the day from a larger, more global perspective, and which is a truer perspective.
But that takes the consciousness to be able to do that.
That's right. That's what I'm talking about. And that's my personal practice, and it's my kind of my evangelical practice. My evangelism is to preach this larger and larger vision, the largest possible vision we can put together, and that's what integral theory speaks to. I remember the first time I read 20 years ago, Ken Wilber writing about Is there a way of taking everything that we know from science and the great religious traditions and psychology and all of this and create the largest possible view of what is? It's not only more compassionate, it's truer.
Right, because it's what is.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right. And so we have a society that represents all of these different colors of evolution that makes sense in terms of how we've learned to live in the world and in ways in how we've learned to self-destruct in the world also through technology and through fear, because the fear drives the technology to protect us in ways that perhaps destroy nature.
Right.
And destroy, you know, seas, you know, and pollute and all of that. It's the fear of not having enough. It's the fear of, you know, I guess running out of things. We've become a very materialistic society, and in a sense don't need to be, but there's a meme of acquiring and of waste.
Right.
And somehow, you know, we can get to what's called the green level of evolution, which tries to fix things. Unfortunately, green didn't really succeed because it's very naive. It doesn't appreciate all of this political propaganda going on.
Well, that's in fact, Beck and Cowan in their book Spiral Dynamics speak to the failings of green. Green is definitely an advance over these earlier levels, and because it's more inclusive, it sees more perspectives. But it also, it's very postmodern. That level of consciousness rejects the notion that the earlier levels have value, that traditional beliefs have value.
So it's ignoring them and ignoring the threat of them to destroy green.
And also ignore the contributions, because each of these is has a contribution to make, not only in historic development, but even in the present moment. And so that's why the evolution beyond green into higher levels of consciousness beyond the green opens up not only more compassion to people operating primarily at earlier levels, but also to recognize that the real solutions for this planet and for our species have to do with integrating all of these beliefs and not just saying, well, I'm at this level and every earlier level of consciousness is invalid.
So what I'm feeling is that the only hope for the future is a rising consciousness that reduces fear.
Yeah.
So that all this political propaganda can't plug us in the same way. People can see through it.
Right.
And understanding, and maybe that's why we're going through a period now where we're being given so many untruths, so many lies, that it's like, well, wait a minute, you know, let's stop to find out what might really be the truth and not just listen to people and believe in them. You know, we have to dig deeper. And so when we understand that we're responsible for our own understanding of truth, then that's a higher level of consciousness. And that can then say, okay, what's the truth of what we really need in society to make progress, but respecting, you know, our fears, understanding them, but at least in some way reducing them. So we tell the truth so that we're not so fear-driven by lies.
Right. It all comes back to the old, you are what you eat. I mean, think about it this way, that if you become conscious that eating processed sugar will hurt you, that consciousness will allow for a growth beyond sugar. Oh, I don't need sugar. There are other ways I can satisfy my yearnings, my pleasure for good food. And to realize the addictive nature of sugar. Oh, sugar's actually a poison. Fear's the same way. Fear gives us something, which is why we seek it out. It's why we turn on the TV news that feeds our fear craving.
And that's the purpose of tribal chiefs, is to show you that we understand what you're afraid of. We're going to prove what you're afraid of so we can go to war against it.
Right, right. And they and tribal chiefs reject the other ways of validating truth, you know, hashtag fake news, you know, hashtag, you know, fake science.
Well, you have to have something to go to war, or everything to go to war about, so people who feed on fear will feel that you're serving them properly.
Right. Exactly, exactly. And the people whom you have fed your fear, if you're the authoritarian chieftain, you have fed your people fear, and they are dependent upon you both for the fear and for protection from that which they fear. That's why authoritarian regimes are in the business of manufacturing fear, just like Big Sugar is in the business of manufacturing sugar. And it requires our I love when you use the word, it's our responsibility. It's our responsibility to watch what we consume. I haven't watched television news in 25 years. In the same way that I get my news from other sources, but I don't watch television news because it seems to me that it is designed to provoke my fear. The Weather Channel is designed to provoke fear. They have some guy standing out in the middle of a hurricane being battered and almost killed by the hurricane.
That's wild. But then again, they're showing people that if there's a hurricane coming, this could happen to you. So you
might. Well, that's a very generous way of putting it. To me, I think they're just stoking fear.
No, well, they are, but for purpose of people knowing how to protect themselves. But then again, you know, that's the good side of it. But the, you know, the negative side, and what people are looking for, that's why they turn to these fear-provoking opportunities, is that, you know, they want to know, not only are they afraid, but they want to know that you know what they're afraid of, and that you'll protect them from it. And that's why people who think tribally are always looking for, you know, politicians who point out the enemy that has to be killed. And you know, if they can tell you, you know, what the evil axis is, then you know that they're on your side because they know the evil that you're afraid of. And then you want them. But if they're trying to make it a better world and say, oh, let's find the good in all, you're going to be even more frightened that they're not going to kill the enemy for you.
Well, and there's a bit of truth to the suspicion of somebody who comes in too Pollyanna. I think you used the word naive to talk about Green. Come in with too Pollyanna-ish without any appreciation for human consciousness at the lower levels and how that operates. That is naive and dangerous. And so a truly integral approach in our political and economic world is completely inclusive, but not just across all borders, but inclusive all the way down to all levels of consciousness.
Right, and so what it is understanding tribal needs, understanding that people need to protect themselves and each other, certainly the ones they identify with need protection because they can kill everybody else. you know, to rise above that consciousness so that people aren't so the truth is more revealed and lies are more exposed and fear doesn't get as pushed as it has. I think that's the only hope for our future.
I'm with you there, Peter. I think that's right.
Right. So we want more and more. We don't know what it takes, you know, because you can talk all day long in ways that are collective and that might only drive people to seek more tribal leaders.
Right, and I mean, we saw this with Marxism. I mean, in the mid-19th century, in the earliest days of it, it created a utopian paradise, at least in the writings. But what happened immediately, as soon as these ideas took over in tribal communities, well, we had the gulags of Stalin immediately.
Right. So that's tribal. That's very protective. Kill the enemy.
Right.
Protect yourselves and expose the enemy even within your own tribe in as many ways as possible.
Exactly. Some of the folks at the vanguard of the ideology that was being espoused by Stalin and his buddies were the ones who were first slaughtered.
Yeah, right. So in the end, there's only very few people standing. And so maybe because the word socialism is such a bad word and people are afraid of it. And maybe it's just that the fear is that if it's socialized, it'll create gulags and we'll end up with a society that we don't understand anymore that will kill us. Okay. So actually, we're getting at the end of the show. We have so much more we can talk about, and hopefully we can another time. So Tom Gardard, how can people find you?
IntegralCompany.com, IntegralCompany.com. It's my website, and they can even contact me by clicking the Conversations tab and scheduling a conversation. We can talk about whatever you want to talk about.
That's wonderful. Tom, it's so great to have you back on Energy Stew.
Great to be with you again, Peter. Thank you.
And this is Peter Roth, your host, and I can be reached at peter@heartriver, heartriver.org. I'd love to hear from you, and thanks so much for listening. Thank you.